no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
You, finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you escape.
Escape with us now to the Old West and the unusual story of a merciless professional killer, as Ernest Haycox tells it in Wild Jack Rhett.
Red Mesa. A little town springing out of the hot, dry prairie beside the Chisholm Trail. A saloon, a hotel, two general stores, and a tiny church where the decent citizenry might pray for salvation while a wilder element, trail driver and teamster and buffalo hunter, restlessly searched out friend and enemy along the dusty main street. A small hill rose on the western edge of Red Mesa, plagued with a rash of graves, some marked and cared for, others sinking and forgotten.
Man that is born of woman hath but a short time to live and is full of misery. He cometh up and is cut down like a flower. He flieth as it were a shadow. While we're praying, a couple of you boys start throwing some dirt on the sheriff. Oh, Lord, with whom do live the spirits of them that be dead, and in whom the souls of them?
And that same evening, a committee of the leading citizens of Red Mesa gathered together at Mayor Wayne's home to decide upon a new sheriff.
All right, gentlemen, sit down and let's get this settled. Gentlemen, to make this town a decent place for our women, folk, and children, we've got to have a sheriff Todd Mallon and his kind can't kill. We need the toughest gunfighter available, and I want to propose...
Just a minute, Mayor Wayne. Let me speak.
All right. Go ahead, Boy Allen.
I don't think we should get all upset just because we lost another sheriff. Jim Speed worked out fine for Red Mesa. All we need is another sheriff just about like him.
I expected that, Bo Helen. All you look out for is to keep that saloon of yours full of anybody who'll buy whiskey and gamble. I still propose we reform this town by sending for a man some of you may have heard of. Jack Rhett.
Gentlemen, I do want my saloon full. And full of the only men who'll bring any money at all into Red Mesa. Cowpunchers coming up the Chisholm Trail with Texas cattle. Thirsty men on the prod from a long drive. But you give them Jack Rhett instead of a little fun, and this town will go broke.
We'll chance that, Bo Helen. We'll chance that.
What about Matt Travner? What's he got to say?
I have nothing to say, gentlemen. As U.S. Deputy Marshal for the district, my job is strictly outside Red Mesa. You run your town any way you like. I'll handle the surrounding territory.
Know anything about Jack Rhett, Travner?
Just by reputation, professional town tamer, and I've heard he's the most cold-blooded killer ever drew a gun.
Ravner's right. We can't afford a man like that here.
Let's put it to a vote, gentlemen. All in favor of sending for Jack Rhett, raise their right hand. 5-1. The matter is settled, gentlemen. Good night.
Yeah, good night.
Good night, Wayne.
You'll wait and see, Mary, Travner?
If you don't mind, Mayor.
Of course. Sit down. She'll be out in a minute. Well, boy, Ellen is pretty mad. But after Jack Red is here for a while, at least there'll be less gunfighting.
Be less anyway if Todd Mellon were out of the way. He sets a bad example. He's a hard man to catch.
Well, you've done all you can, Travner. There's just too much territory around here for Mellon and his gang to lose themselves in. He'll have to be taken by a town officer. And I think Rhett is the man to do it, if Mellon comes to town again.
He'll come, Mayor. When the word gets out that Rhett is sheriff here, Mellon will have to face him or lose his reputation with his own men.
Oh. Good evening, Father. Hello, Matt.
Good evening.
Hello, darling.
Well, Matt Travner, aren't you going to kiss me?
Of course, sure. Here.
Mary, what a shameless wench you are.
Oh, Father, you're old-fashioned. After all, we're engaged.
Your mother, God rest her soul, didn't behave like that when we were engaged.
The war changed things, Father.
I know, but not for the better. Well, I'm off to bed. Don't stay up too late now. Good night.
Good night, Father. Mayor. You look worried, Matt.
Do I?
Tell me about it.
Well, it's just that they're sending for a new sheriff. A legal killer named Rhett. He has quite a reputation, and there'll always be men to challenge it.
That means more gunfighting. Is that it?
I'm afraid so. It's a bloody way to peace, Mary.
I know. Let's not worry about it now. Come on. I'll pick some coffee for us.
Three weeks later, Wild Jack Rhett rode into Red Mesa. He was 38 and at the peak of his reputation. He stood well over 6 feet, better than 200 pounds of plain sinew. Tawny blonde hair grew long in the frontier style, and his features, fair and tinted like a girl's, were boldly aquiline. He was a picturesque man, till one looked at his eyes, which were large and pale blue, and had the disconcerting trick of remaining too steadily on people. There was to be seen in him the suggestion of inhumanity. He sent word to the committee that he'd meet him at the mayor's office that evening.
It's 8 o'clock now. Where is he?
He's in town, and that's bad enough.
Be a sport, boy, Helen. We took a fair vote on Rhett.
Here he comes now.
My name is Jack Rhett. I have your offer.
I'm Peter Wayne, mayor of Red Mesa. Do you accept it?
Depends on what you want. Tell me.
Well, Rhett, this is a difficult town. The Chisholm Trail lies just across the river, and we get most of our money from the riders passing through with Texas cattle. Now we want them to have a decent time for their money, but we don't like a lot of gunplay and killing.
I've always been accustomed to complete authority, Mayor. I presume to know my job, and I won't have interference.
That's agreed, Rhett. By the way, the last sheriff had a rule that riders leave their hardware at his office. He had trouble enforcing it.
A poor rule. Let them pack their guns.
Well, that gives the wild ones a fair chance at you.
I never give a man a fair chance at me. Is that all, gentlemen?
Bo Helen's saloon was the usual deadfall, with a huge bar along one side of the room and gaming tables toward the rear. Next morning, Bo Helen stood tapping the mahogany of the bar with his fingertips, staring thoughtfully at nothing.
Good morning, Bo Helen.
It's noon, Samus.
Huh? Oh, sure. Draw me a beer, Mike. Where's the new sheriff, Bo Helen?
Over there at the corner table. Came in just before you did.
Uh-huh.
Barkeep, bring me a cigar and a glass of rye.
Yeah, now he's going to clean and reload his 6 guns, one at a time.
By golly, he is. How'd you know?
It's an old gunman's trick. to impress the citizens.
But there's no one here except you and me.
Then it's to impress me.
I don't... goodbye, Bo Helen, Mike.
You've got something to say to me, Bo Helen?
Yes, yes, I have. You're smart, Red. I recognize that. But your record for killing is too severe, and my business depends on an open town. Now, the reform element got you, and I'll go along for now. But just remember one thing. I can break you, Rhett, any time.
I was waiting for that, Bo Helen.
Well, and I guess we understand each other.
Hello?
Oh, any luck, Matt?
Just a morning's ride.
Matt, here's Jack Rhett. Rhett, this is Mac Travener, U.S. Deputy Marshal for the district.
Glad to know you, Red.
You're young.
Don't be misled. Red, your job is in town. Mine is everything outside. So I'll either back you up here in Red Mesa or leave you strictly alone.
I'll handle Red Mesa.
All right. One more thing. I want Todd Mallon. If he comes to town again, he'll have to be taken. Will you do that or shall I?
What is he?
Outlaw. His main line is plain robbery. Now I want him for killing Jim Speed.
Let me handle Mallon.
Why?
Killing's my trade. Man doesn't live with enough animal instinct to get me.
Maybe. But killing you would build a man's reputation considerable.
Just so?
Well, good luck, Red.
There was peace for a full week in Red Mesa. And then on Saturday night, Matt Travner's prediction came true. Jack Rhett was at his customary post just opposite Bo Helen's saloon, in a chair on the porch of the Chinook Hotel, obscured by the shadows and watching the crowd, his cold, pale eyes half concealed by cigar smoke. Trouble found him thus.
Evening, Sheriff.
Good evening, ma'am.
Keeping an eye on the boys, eh? Oh, shoot!
Where's the sweat that used to be in Abilene? Where's he hiding? Where's that great man, Wild Jack Red? Bring him out!
Hello, cowboy.
That's a lot of killing for one, Sheriff. Three men. I don't like it.
Forget it, friend. Have a drink and forget it.
You're Bo Helen, ain't you?
That's right. Come on now, have one on the house. Now, Mike, fix him up.
I can pay for my liquor.
Yeah, me too.
You never gave him a chance. What kind of sheriff you got stands in a shadow and kills one man and then jumps 50 feet from his gun flash and shoots down two more? Those boys never had a chance at him.
Drink your drink, cowboy.
That was the most merciless killing I ever seen. He's a butcher. I wish I'd gunned him.
Shut up! Rhett. Those kids better be still now.
This is my game. They were fools to play it. Never buck a man who's spent his life learning to kill, son. Get out of town. Get out now.
Red, what if I'd...
Don't try it, son. Don't let your anger destroy you. Drift. Go on. Drift.
Blast your town. I can hold my thirst another 200 miles up the trail. Come on, boys. Yeah. We'll send word back to Texas to go around Red Mesa and let it dry to powder.
Yeah, sure will.
It won't do, Rhett.
It'll do, Bo Helen. Barkeep, bring me a glass of rye. On the house.
Rhett Rhett stood with his back to the bar, holding his drink and a thin black cigar carefully in one hand. He stood there for about 10 minutes. Then trouble came again.
Todd Mellon, he's riding in with four men.
Close the games. Open up the back doors. Well, Jack Rhett, now let's see you shoot down Todd Mellon and four men from the shadows.
Good night, Bo Helen.
Escape, under the direction of Norman McDonald, returns in just a moment. Sorry, but if you think school teachers have it easy, you've got another think coming. Just ask Our Miss Brooks, as played by Eve Arden, on most of these same CBS stations this evening. And now, back to Escape.
When word came to Bo Helen's saloon that Todd Mallon was riding into Red Mesa with four men, Jack Rhett simply walked out, crossed the street to his office, sat down and waited. 20 minutes later, Todd Mallon had arrived and departed. Not a shot fired. Then Jack Rhett went quietly to bed. But early Sunday morning, he was back in his office.
Come in.
Morning, Rhett.
Well, Travner?
There's talk, Rhett.
I expect that.
Now, Rhett, you told me you'd handle Mallon if he came to town.
Yes, Travner.
Well, they say Mallon rode into town last night with four men, rode right up to this office, got down, came inside. That you and he stood here with this desk between you talking. And that a few minutes later, Mallon left and rode out of town.
I play the game my own way, Travner. And I don't want interference from anybody.
People are saying maybe you and Mallon made a deal of some kind.
Well, now, somebody's breaking the Sabbath. Know who it could be, Travner?
No, I don't.
Well, it's a rifle. Sounds like one of those 7-shot Spencers.
Well, then it's old Hack Crow.
Who's he?
An old trapper. Comes to town every few months, sells his furs, gets drunk, goes a little crazy. Jim Speed always laid him away in jail to sober.
Yeah, I'll take a look.
You better stop him, Rhett.
He's only got 2 shots left. That'll satisfy him. I doubt if he'll reload.
And if he notices us and decides to shoot?
Then I'll have to kill him. Hey, Who's that coming out of Bo Helen's?
Ewald Bay, the gambler.
He's a fool.
Now he's getting his horse. You gonna stop him, Rhett?
No. Let him go.
Rhett, the town is your territory, and I won't interfere. But why did you refuse a fair shot at Hack Crow? Ewald Bay is dead.
Which is the more useful citizen, Travner? Crow or Bay? The West is full of gamblers.
There was considerable talk that day in Red Mesa over Jack Rhett's aloof and cruel calm in condoning a shooting that had occurred under his very eyes and within reach of his formidable guns. Then, mid-afternoon, a rider came up from the prairie and reported finding old Hack Crow dead in a coulee, dry-gulched and robbed. Mayor Wayne heard about it and went to Bo Helen's saloon to hear more.
Good evening, Mayor.
Hello, Bo Helen. Shot of brandy.
And what do you think of your great Jack Rhett now, Mayor?
It looks bad.
Now, look, Mayor. Everyone knew Hack Crow carried his profits in his pocket. He always did that. So Rhett allowed him to leave, and Todd Mallon and his men were waiting for him in the coulee. It's as simple as that.
We have no proof of that, Bo Helen.
No? And why didn't Rhett take Mallon when he rode in here last night? Because they made a business arrangement, that's why.
Well, it doesn't look good, but... Shh! There's Rhett now.
Barkeep! glass of rye.
I don't want to talk to him yet. I'm leaving. Good night, Bo Helen.
Good night, man. Mike, give me that rye. I'll take it over to the sheriff myself. Here's your drink, Sheriff. Mind if I sit down?
Game never changes, Bo Helen. I know what you're going to say.
I warned you I could break you, Rhett.
It's an old story to me. Every town's got one insider who plays along with the outlaws. And I knew you to be that one here when I first saw you. Running a saloon, you'd know when a cattle buyer was riding out of town carrying specie, when the overland stage was loaded with gold. There was a quarrel over the split of profits between you and Mallon, and you fell apart. That's always the way.
Very shrewd, right?
It's an old story, Bo Helen. I know it by heart.
Very shrewd. But you can't play the same game.
All sheriffs are supposed to be crooked.
You and Mallon had an agreeable little chat last night. Did he make you a good offer, Rhett?
Maybe I should accept his offer, Bo Helen, just to keep you two split. Maybe I should do that.
Rhett, I've seen sheriffs come and go. It's a chancy trade.
Sheriffs die. They all die. It's only a question of time.
You're a hard one, Jack Rhett.
You might make your peace with Mallon. It'd have to be that way, otherwise you'll have little chance of getting rid of me, Bo Helen.
It may be that way.
I wouldn't be surprised. I always expect the worst of men, and am seldom disappointed.
It was turning dark as Jack Rhett left Bo Helen's saloon. Crossing the street, he walked into his office, but continued on out through the back door. A few minutes later, he stood in the gathering shadows opposite the OK stable and watched Bo Helen ride out and drift into the prairie to the south. He knew now what to expect. It would happen soon, perhaps tomorrow. He returned to his office and slept the night there.
Come in. Well.
Morning. Rhett, I want you to meet Mary Wayne.
Miss Wayne, very proud.
I wanted to know you.
To meet him, Mary, not to know him. Rhett lives in a closed world.
See that? I have no friends.
Oh, we're to be married on Thursday, Mr. Rhett. I should like you to be there.
I'd be most happy. Thank you.
Now, Mary, would you wait outside? I got some business to discuss with the sheriff.
Of course, Matt. But don't be long. Goodbye, Mr. Rhett.
Bye, Miss Wayne.
Rhett, this afternoon I'm leaving to find Todd Mallon. You had your chance, but you let him go.
Wait, Travner. Wait.
I've tried patience, Rhett, and I'm a poor hand at it.
Travner, you have a fine girl. If it's not presuming, let me congratulate you. Compliment her.
Thank you. Was that all?
I'll take care of Mallon. Give me a little time. It's my job.
Retta, I want to believe you.
No man wearing a star should believe anybody. It's a weakness. Haven't I told you?
Blessed if I quite understand you, Retta.
And understand this. Every man has his time. When it comes, he knows it. There's no turning back. Nothing makes any difference then except to stand up to the finish and go out in decent style.
And yet you're the man never believes in giving another man a break.
Don't try to understand me.
You want help with Mallon?
I have no faith in help.
Matt?
Coming, Mary.
Wait, Travener. I'll suggest this much. Take one man. Ride due north to where the cattle trail crosses Tempest Creek. Be there tonight. Understand?
Red, I'd hate to oppose you.
If you did, you'd lose. I've been 15 years at this, Travner, which is 5 years beyond average luck.
That evening, Jack Rett took up his post on the porch of the Chinook Hotel, dressed in his best, a hard white shirt, a blood-red Windsor tie, and a suit of black broadcloth swelling around the big, uncompromising shoulders. He sat there calm behind the smoke of his cigar, waiting.
Full moon tonight, Sheriff.
That's right.
No offense, mind you.
Good evening, Rhett.
Hello, Mayor Wayne. Mayor, have you seen Travner?
He rode north this afternoon. He'll be back tomorrow, he said.
Good.
Where's the sheriff?
Here I am.
Rhett, listen, I just come up South Creek and Todd Mallon and six men were only a quarter mile behind me, heading into town.
All right, friend. Take cover.
Yeah, sure.
Rhett stood up and moved into the shadow at the end of the hotel porch. Across the street, Bo Helen appeared in the full glow of the doorway of his saloon.
Come out in the dark and meet your friends, Jack Rhett. What are you afraid of? It's only Mallon riding in to see you.
Thieves fall out, but the urge for profits brings them together again.
You should have known it, Rhett.
Nothing surprises me.
Well, oh, there you are, Red. Surprised to find you exposing your great reputation out there in the middle of the street.
Every man has his time. You want to try it, Bo Helen? Or will you wait for help?
I'll wait.
The arriving horses came up into the moonlit street and halted at the corner of the saloon. Bo Helen's hand lifted toward the group, and at that order, the horsemen spread out until they were flank to flank all across the street. Todd Mallon advanced from the line and stopped, square and alert above the saddle. Jack Rett stood alone in the middle of the street, his eyes flashing a hard fury. Then he dropped his cigar and ground it beneath the boot. It was a final gesture.
How are you, Mallon? Goodbye, gentlemen.
Next day, Red Mesa buried some more men out on the hill and talked of Jack Rett, who was more of a mystery to them now than when living. To all of them but one, Matt Travner.
Nobody knows a killer's world, Mary. Wasn't any room in Jack Rett for much pity. But he sent me away to save me from what he knew was coming. I think that was a kindness, although I had no fear.
It was a fine thing for him to do, Matt. But they say he stood in the middle of the street to face them all in the moonlight. Why? It wasn't his style.
As long as he was sure of himself, he never gave anybody an even chance, Mary. But killers live and die by instinct. And somewhere along the evening, he got the warning. After that, it was just a matter of pride. He killed Mallon and Bo Helen before he died, standing up and in good style. And that's sort of a greatness, isn't it?
Under the direction of Norman MacDonald, Escape has brought you Wild Jack Rett by Ernest Haycox, especially adapted for radio by John Meston. Jack Rett was played by John Daner, with Larry Dubkin as Matt and Lou Krugman as Bo Helen. Parley Bear was the narrator. Featured in the cast were Junius Matthews, Russell Simpson, Gene Bates, Paul Dubov, and Sam Edwards. The special music for Escape was composed and conducted by Ivan Dittmars.
Next week, we escape with the story of two small boys who discover the most fabulous Christmas ever dreamed of as Anthony Ellis tells it in his delightful tale, The Cave.
Stay tuned now for Make Believe Town, which follows immediately on most of these same CBS stations. Roy Rowan speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 45, as written and directed by Harry W. Junkin. Ladies and gentlemen, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Fred. Friends, as some of you know, Radio City Playhouse is now on the air twice weekly, Mondays and Thursdays. The Thursday evening show is called Eight by Request and consists of eight of the best broadcasts which Radio City Playhouse has presented during the past year. This Thursday at 8:30 Eastern Daylight Saving Time, Eight by Request will present the gracious and charming Irene Dunn in Treasure Trove, a tense and compelling story of three good friends and the mysterious evil which almost wrecked their lives. We hope that all regular Playhouse listeners will be with us on both Thursdays and Mondays. Our show tonight stars Carl Swenson, one of the busiest, best, and most popular actors in New York. We're very happy to have him with us. Here then is Carl Swenson in Murder is the Easiest Way, Attraction 45 on Radio City Playhouse.
I had no idea that anything was going on between my son and Diane Rodell. When Doug told me that he wanted to marry her, I did everything I could to stop it. When I saw finally that I couldn't stop it, I decided on murder. You possibly understand how a father feels. Doug was my whole life. From the day his mother had died, the boy had been the center of everything. Perhaps because he was slightly lame, I felt deeper about everything he did. I didn't want his physical handicap to warp his life. I wanted him to be happy, successful, well-adjusted. Maybe I wanted too much, I don't know. I always had the sneaking feeling that he was a little bit ashamed of my business. I manufactured girdles and foundation garments. I think that he thought it was a sissy sort of business for a man to be in. I guess the fact is I never knew what Doug thought. When he told me he wanted to marry Diane Rodell, I'll never forget the blinding stab of pure fright I experienced. He came bursting into the office, glowing with pride and pleasure.
Hi, Dad. Got a minute?
Well, hello, Doug. Of course I've got a minute. Come on in and sit down.
Dad, I want you to be the first to know that you're going to be a father-in-law.
Doug, you mean you're going to get married? Well, who is she?
The gal who makes millions of women think they can have her figure if they wear smooth skin girdles.
Doug, surely you don't mean Diane. Not Diane Rodell.
Now, wait a minute, Dad. I don't like the tone of your voice. Just because she's a model is
no
reason
for... Now, isn't it possible that you've let yourself get carried away? I mean, a beautiful girl like that
And what?
Doug, I want you to be happy, but please, Doug, not Diane Rodell.
Why do you say not Diane Rodell like that for?
Because I know what she is.
Dad.
She's a very experienced little number, and she knows that you'll own this business someday. She's the patient, careful type.
Dad.
And she's grasping and greedy.
Cut it out,
she's
Dad.
She's cheap and common and no good.
Cut it out, Dad.
Doug, you can't. You can't. I won't let you.
If you're going to talk like that, let's drop the subject.
Doug, now, please, let's not quarrel, but please, let's talk this thing over.
There's nothing to talk over.
Doug. You're making a mistake. You're making a terrible mistake. The girl is no good. Believe me, I know.
I just can't let you do this.
What do you mean, let me?
That's exactly what I mean. I won't let you.
Well, I'm afraid you won't be able to stop me.
Do you mean to say that you've never figured out why Diane Rodell, with her looks, would marry a 24-year-old kid with a lame foot?
Dad, after that one, there's nothing much left for us to say.
Hello, Miss Campbell. Mr. Feeney there? Or would you ask him to step into my office for a moment? It's urgent. Thanks.
Oh, he can't do it. He just can't do it.
Mary, I promise you, I won't let him do it. I won't let our boy marry that girl.
Hello, Frank. You got something in your mind?
Doug's going to marry Diane Rodell.
Yes, I know.
You know?
Diane phoned me this morning.
What about?
She said that if I had any idea of showing Doug that picture, she'd know what steps to take.
Harry, we've been partners for 10 years. But if it's a choice between your happiness and Doug's, Harry, please, the boy is only 24. You're older than I am. You're nearly 50. Now, please, Harry.
I'm afraid the answer is no, Frank. I'm sorry.
I can't let Doug throw his life away on a girl like that. She's a tramp. She's no good.
Doug was just here, and I handled it badly. I hurt him. I said something about what could a girl like Diane see in a kid with a lame foot.
Oh, that was a bit rough, wasn't it?
What did you expect me to say? Congratulations?
Well, don't start yelling at me,
Why
Frank.
Shouldn't I yell at you?
If it wasn't for you, that girl would never have met Doug.
I know.
What happened that night?
Oh, Jimmy Davis and our advertising department found her and introduced us, and we had a few drinks after work one evening. She asked me up to her apartment. She had a guy in the closet with a camera. It wasn't exactly a shakedown. She just wanted a 5-year contract as a sole model for smooth skin girdles at $400 a week.
How bad was the picture?
Oh, if my wife ever saw it, she'd throw me out.
Harry, Agnes is reasonable. She'd understand.
Frank, Agnes hasn't understood anything for years. She owns my half of smooth skin now. And if she ever saw a photograph of me kissing Diane Rodell, she'd throw me out. I'm sorry, but I can't risk that.
Harry, you've got a big salary. Surely you can live on $15,000 a year.
I've gotten used to a good living. If I show Doug that photograph, Diane will mail Agnes another one the next morning. As long as she has that negative, I'm staying out of the whole thing. Why don't you try buying her off?
You think I could?
Diane Rodell will do anything for money. It's just a question of settling the price.
All right. I'll try.
I'm sorry, Frank. I'd like to help, but I've got my own neck to think about.
Diane?
Yes, who's this?
Frank Wineglass.
Well, how nice to hear from you. Not that I haven't been expecting to.
Have you?
Yes. Yes, I have.
What about?
Oh, let's stop playing games, Mr. Wineglass. I knew how you'd feel about my marrying Doug. Do you want to discuss it?
As soon as possible.
I have a date with Doug tonight. The dear boy's so impetuous, he'll probably want to run off and get married somewhere this very evening.
What time is your date?
Dinner. He's picking me up at 7. Supposing you come up here around 5:30.
All right. I'll be there.
Good evening, Mr. Wineglass. Come in.
Thanks.
My living room is a little cramped. Of course, I expect to change all that soon.
Look, Diane, let's be frank. I don't mean to sound crude, but I know what you are.
Oh, don't make it sound as though I had leprosy.
I'm sorry. Look, please leave the kid alone. He's only 24. He's always been very sensitive. Being lame has given him all sorts of
Well, not neuroses exactly, but Diane, he's idealistic and sensitive. And he's in love with your looks, and I can't blame him. But, Diane, it's not right for him. It'll break his heart if he finds out that you...
That what?
That you blackmail. That you've got an incriminating photograph of Harry Feeney. The disillusionment would break his heart. Now, I'm not here to quarrel with you, Diane. I'm here to beg you to let that kid alone. Now, I'm willing to pay you anything within reason. How much do you want?
Oh, I didn't think we'd get down to figures quite this quickly. However, if that's the way you want it, how about 100,000?
Diane, please, now let's be reasonable.
I think that's very reasonable.
I'm making you a fair offer. I expect you to meet me halfway.
Why should I?
$100,000 is out of the question.
What did you have in mind?
Half that amount.
$50,000?
I can't possibly afford any more.
Look, Mr. Wineglass, I have my own sources of information. You're worth almost $500,000.
But not in cash, Diane. If you figure the plant and the equipment, yes, but I can't give you machinery. I just couldn't raise $100,000. Now, please, Diane, please, please be reasonable. I can't let this happen to Doug. I just can't.
Oh, this broken-hearted father act is getting tiresome, Mr. Wineglass. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't be bad for Doug at all. We might hit it off rather well. If you can't pay off now, that suits me. I'll get it eventually anyway.
Diane, I can't raise $100,000 in cash. It's impossible.
Then I'll wait.
You can't marry him, Diane. It'll ruin his life. He's terribly in love with you, and when he finds out...
But he won't find out. If you try to tell him, he'll never speak to you again. He'll say you're jealous and that you're lying. You see, I don't care which way it goes. $100,000 now, or we get married, and eventually it means the same thing.
I'll cut him off. I'll kick him out of the business and cut him off.
You think that'll help? You really think you could stand being alienated from Doug, from your only son?
How do you women get so rotten? So rotten?
If you know what's good for you, Mr. Wineglass, you'll keep a civil tongue in your head.
You're cheap and common and no good.
Why, you...
You are. You're dirty and rotten, and you're not going to marry Doug.
Just try and stop me.
I'm warning you, Diane. I'll stop you if I have to kill you. This was the girl that Doug wanted to marry. Cold, calculating, bad all through. The thought of it made me physically sick. Doug, with his fine young face and his blonde hair. I couldn't stand it. This was my son. This was the reason I worked, the reason I lived. If this thing happened to him, my life would be over. Even at 45, I'd have nothing more to live for. Well, it wasn't going to happen. The next morning, I apologized to Doug. The words stuck in my throat, but I made him believe them.
The things you said yesterday, Dad, are pretty hard to take.
I know, Doug, I know. I'm terribly sorry, and I want you to have the cottage in Newport for a wedding present.
Are you trying to buy me off?
Oh, Doug, please don't hold a grudge. Give me a chance. I've said I'm sorry. Can't we let bygones be bygones?
Okay, Dad. Let's forget it.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks. Well, now can we talk business for a moment?
Sure, what's up?
Would you mind going out of town for a few days?
Where?
Well, I'd like to have you represent us at the National Underwear Manufacturers Convention in San Francisco. You'd have to leave on the Century tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, I know. It isn't much notice.
Well, Diane and I had a couple of things planned, but... Oh, she'll understand. Sure, I can make the train tomorrow.
We'll take her out tonight on your expense account. Really do the town.
Okay.
You'll only be away about 10 days. Take Diane out tonight and then take the morning off, and I'll meet you for a late breakfast, and you can catch the Century at noon. Okay?
Sure, Dad. Whatever you say.
In one conversation, I've regained Doug's confidence and gotten him out of town for 10 days. That was step one. Step two was my alibi. This was going to be a perfect murder. They're not hard, you know, if you use your head. At 9 o'clock that night, I went to my club, the Hampton Club on 48th Street. As usual, Colonel Dover was in the reading room. That's the way he spent all his evenings, reading the Times. At 9:01, I said good evening to him. Good evening, Colonel Dover.
Good evening, Wineglass.
I sat down behind him and watched him for a few minutes. At 9:10, I slipped quietly out of the reading room, through the French windows that opened into a little court, and out onto 49th Street. I walked a half block to Diane Rodell's apartment. At 9:13, I was climbing through her kitchen window that opened onto a service porch at the back of her building. At 9:15, I was sitting in front of the portable typewriter on the desk in her living room. I left my gloves on while I typed. Come. Alone. Diane. Dear Harry, I need a little extra cash, $5,000. Not much for a rich man like you. If you don't want Agnes to see that photograph, you'd better turn up with the money. Thursday night, 10 sharp, all 20s or smaller. Be sure, darling, that you come alone. Diane. It's foolproof. It's foolproof. At 9:24, I was back in the Hampton Club reading room. I slipped quietly back into my seat. The whole thing had taken 14 minutes. Colonel Dover hadn't budged. He was still there, still reading. I was positive that he hadn't missed me. On my way home, I mailed a letter to Harry Feeney, and then I slept a good, comfortable 9 hours. The next morning, Doug and I had breakfast, and afterwards I put him in a cab with a suitcase and plenty of time to catch the Century. Then I went up to the office to see if Harry Feeney had received Diane's letter. Right after the first mail delivery, Harry Feeney came in with Diane's letter in his hand.
Frank, I'm absolutely desperate. I've got to raise $5,000 by tomorrow night.
Oh, well, what for?
Here, read this.
Who's it from?
Diane, read it.
Dear Harry, I need a little extra cash. $5,000, not much. You better turn up with the money Thursday night at 10 sharp, all 20. I'll be sure, darling, that you come along, Diane. Harry, this is blackmail.
Yeah.
Getting us to sign a 5-year modeling contract is one thing, but this is blackmail. This is a matter for the police.
Frank, will you try to understand? Diana's no fool. She knows darn well I can't chance Agnes seeing that picture. So I stick her in jail for blackmail. She's still sent that picture to Agnes. And while I'd love to see Diane in jail, I'd hate to have Agnes throw me out.
In other words, you're going to give her the $5,000?
If you loan it to me.
I'll give you a check in the morning. You can cash it and take the money up tomorrow night. Things were going very well. The alibi and the motive. I could get rid of Harry Feeney, too, this silly, slightly alcoholic little man who's held me back for years. The letter went in my drawer as Exhibit A. The next morning, I gave Harry Feeney a check for $5,000. Then I telephoned Diane.
Hello?
Diane, it's Frank Wineglass. I've been thinking things over. I'll meet your price.
$100,000?
It's worth that much to me to prevent Doug ruining his life.
When can we get together?
How about tonight?
All right. What time?
9:15.
9:15 will be fine.
I want the negative of that picture that you have of Harry Feeney. Will you have it there?
I have it here now. I'll see you tonight at 9:15.
All right. Goodbye. That night, I went again to the Hampton Club. As usual, Colonel Dover was in the reading room. Again, I said good evening, and again he answered me.
Good evening, Colonel Dover.
Good evening, Wineglass. Good evening.
I sat down a little behind him and to the left. At 9:10, I slipped quietly out of the reading room, through the French doors, across the court, out to 49th Street. I was sweating, nervous, tense. In my pocket, I had Harry Feeney's gun, the one that he'd kept in his desk drawer at the office for as long as I could remember. I walked through the crowds like somebody in a trance. And this time, I used the front entrance of her apartment. And at exactly 9:13, I was ringing Diane's doorbell.
Hello, Mr. Wineglass. Come in.
Hello, Diane. Thanks.
Would you like a drink or anything?
No, thanks. Sit down.
Say, what is this? What are you doing? What's the idea of the gun? What is this?
I'm going to kill you.
Look, let's not play Alan Ladd, shall we?
Last night, while you were out with Doug, I wrote Harry Feeney a letter on that typewriter over your signature, also typed.
You were here last night?
In it, you asked for $5,000 for the picture that you got of him. He borrowed the money from me, and he'll be up here at 10 o'clock.
What?
He'll find you dead with his gun beside you.
You're crazy. You're
at the trial, Colonel Dover in the Hampton Club reading room will swear I was there all evening.
Now, look. Look, let's not get excited. I'll be glad to give you the picture now.
I'm sure you will.
I'll give up, Doug. Now, look, Mr. Wineglass. Here's the negative. Here, take it.
Just don't move. Don't move.
Frank, for heaven's sake.
Some men will do anything for their sons. Have you seen Death of a Salesman?
You mean it. You actually mean it.
This could be the death of a sales girl. Except that what you have got to sell has been picked over so often, I doubt if there's a market anywhere. Good night, Miss Rodell. I had to fight with myself not to run all the way back to the club. Somehow I did the necessary things. The gun beside her, the incriminating negative, the front door slightly open. I was almost hysterical by the time I got back to the club. I caught my breath in the courtyard and slipped into the chair behind Colonel Dover. And very quietly, I picked up a magazine from the table beside me. I'd been gone exactly 11 minutes. It was 21 minutes after 9. And then I let the Colonel have it.
Good Lord, Wineglass, if you've got bronchitis, why don't you go to a doctor?
Oh, I'm sorry, Colonel. There's something in my throat.
How can anybody read with that racket?
Oh, I'm sorry. Since I've disturbed you anyway, would you mind telling me the time?
It's not quite 22 after 9.
Thank you.
It was perfect. All evening I'd been in the reading room of the Hampton Club.
Colonel Dover would swear to it. At 10:30, there was a telephone call for me. I knew who it would be. Be Harry Feeney. Be hysterical. Desperate. Want advice. He'd gone up with the money and found his shot. I was quite calm when I stepped into the telephone booth beside the club desk. Hello?
Frank, it's Harry.
Oh, what is it? You sound upset.
I'm nearly crazy. Something terrible has happened.
Oh, well, what is it?
I was supposed to take that money after Diane tonight at 10 o'clock, and Agnes has dreamed up a bridge game.
What?
I can't get away. I'm afraid if I don't turn up, she'll mail that picture to Agnes.
But
Frank, you've got to go over and explain. She's not far from the Hampton Club, and, well, I've tried to call Diane a couple of times when I've been dummy, but she's not answering the phone. Please go over and stall her off. Frank. Hello, Frank.
Pure, stark terror clutched at my insides. If Harry Feeney played bridge all evening, he'd have a perfect alibi, too. I sat there in that close, hot telephone booth and let the fear rush over me. Somehow I got home. After three Nembutals, I got to sleep. About 5 a.m. When I woke up, the telephone had been ringing for a long time. It was past noon. That horrible, insistent bell beat its way into my consciousness. Hello?
Dad, where have you been? We've been phoning all over for you.
Why, Doug?
Dad, something terrible has happened. Somebody shot Diane last night. They say I did it. Please, Dad, can you come down right away? I'm at the 72nd Street Station. I don't know what's going on.
Doug, are you in New York?
Dad, can't you understand? Diane's been shot.
Where are you? Where are you? You're in San Francisco.
No, I didn't go. I decided to fly instead of taking the train. That way I could spend a couple of extra days with Diane.
Dad, I didn't do it. I didn't. You know I didn't do it.
Doggy, I don't know what to say.
I know I should have caught the century, but by flying, I could spend 2 extra days in New York with Diane and still get to San Francisco for the opening of the convention. I got a seat out on a plane for tomorrow. I went up there late last night and I found her. Shot. There was a photograph. A horrible photograph that I couldn't believe it. I just sat there, numb. And I phoned the police. It was a nightmare, asking me questions, talking about a lover's quarrel.
Well, what did the police say?
Some big guy kept harping on the motive. That I'd found out about Diane, that I'd killed her in a jealous rage. Dad, what can I do? I didn't kill her.
I know you didn't. Believe me, I know that you didn't.
Dad, the way you say that, Dad, what is it? Why are you looking at me like that? Dad, what is it?
I can't tell you, Doug. I'll tell the district attorney.
You have just heard Murder is the Easiest Way, Attraction 45 on Radio City Playhouse. Carl Swenson starred as Frank Wineglass. Marilyn Erskine was Diane. Nelson Olmsted was Harry Feeney, and Bill Lipton was Doug. The music was composed and conducted by Roy Shield. Script was based on a story by Jules Archer and was written and directed by Harry W. Junkin. This is Harry Junkin again. Next week on Radio City Playhouse, Louis Van Ruten in Disintegration, a tense psychological drama of an actor breaking down mentally. All 12 parts are played by Mr. Van Ruten in the most exciting job of acting we have ever heard. We hope you'll be listening to Disintegration, starring Louis Van Ruten, next week, Attraction 46, on Radio City Playhouse. Good night, everybody. Listen to Irene Dunn in Treasure Trove, Item 2 on 8 by Request, this coming Thursday. Fred Collins speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.